Welcome to the Big Careers Small Children podcast. My name is Verena Hefti. I believe that no one should have to choose between becoming a CEO and enjoying their young children. For much too long, brilliant people have found themselves stuck on the career ladder when they have children, and that leads to gender inequality in leadership and the same stale, mostly male, middle-class people leading our organizations. We absolutely must change this, and I hope that many of you listening right now to this podcast will progress to the most senior leadership roles possible in a way that works for you and for your families, so you can make the decisions that make our world and our organizations better places. Beyond the podcast, I am the CEO and founder of the social enterprise Leaders Plus, which is all about giving parents the support and space to progress to senior leadership in a way that works for them and their families. We have lots of free events and also lots of resources on leadersplus.org, where you can download helpful toolkits such as on returning from maternity leave, or securing a promotion as a working parent, or thriving or surviving, depending how you look at it, as a dual career couple. We also have an award-winning global fellowship program for working parents who have big dreams for their careers but don't want to sacrifice everything for it. You will join a tight-knit, supportive group of people. You'll get space to think about what you want for your life, for your family, for your career, a senior leader mentor, and a lot of targeted support in order to get you where you would like to be. And you can find all that on leadersplus.org/fellowship for the details. The next application deadline is on 20th March 2024, and you can download the brochure on leadersplus.org. Today, Leah Henry and I talk about being a perfectionist, about how to manage a big career when you have very young children, and we share notes about how we managed to find a way to combine a big career with young children in ways that work for us. Enjoy the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, Verena. I'm really pleased to be here. So I am Leah, as you mentioned. I'm the co-founder of CoCareo. So we enable families to book vetted creative professionals, musicians, dancers, actors, as inspiring nannies and mentors for your children. And I have two little boys, Rio, who's three, and Jazz, who's one, and my rock of a husband as well. So that's our little family.
Oh, so is that where the name has come from then? CoCareo. Oh, that is so sweet.
That's right. So Coco is my co-founder, Karina, and Rio is my firstborn.
Oh, that is so lovely. So, and how do you work with your co-founder? Are you job share partners, or, I mean, have you put a label on it, or how are you together?
It's a really good question. I mean, it happened quite organically, really. Initially, I asked her to join me because we had very similar interests and we were operating in a similar space. So we both had just a little side hustle where we used to babysit for families in our neighborhoods and we used to engage them in our creative expertise. So we're both creatives by trade, her in drama, myself in music. And it was just something that we both did separately of each other. And so when I learned that she did that after we met, it was kind of natural that we would sort of join forces to actually solidify this business idea. And essentially, we started working together, neither one of us with a business background, but we kind of both naturally fell into certain places. So I'm more on the sort of external communications, marketing, partnership building side, and she was very much the numbers person, more sort of financial forecasting and all of that sort of stuff. And so we kind of naturally sort of, I became sort of the brand and she became sort of its legs and ensuring that it operates, really. So it happened naturally. So yeah, that's essentially how it all happened.
Well, it's always good to have someone with a numbers brain, especially.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. So I haven't actually known about you until my colleague Joe told me about it. And it's funny because you live so close to where I live. I'm interested, sorry, for any podcast listeners, I just need to ask a quick personal question. Do you have, is it just nannying or do you also provide babysitting?
So the whole idea is that, well, we're actually currently doing a sort of a repositioning exercise because a lot of people see us as sort of childcare, so looking after children. So it does extend to babysitting as well. But really where our bread and butter is that we're bringing in creativity into the home and enabling creative learning. And the idea is to support children's development and emotional well-being through creativity. The bonus is that your kids are also looked after. So the childcare element almost comes secondary to that. But yes, it does extend to whenever you need it. So during the day as a sort of traditional nanny service, or in the evenings if you need to go out for a date or whatever it is. So really, whenever you need it.
Wow, I mean, it does sound, I'm a little bit sold. I will definitely need to check it out because, so we have recently, and sorry if this is not at all down your road, but anyways, we have recently finally found a babysitter. Obviously, we can't rely on just one babysitter, but oh my goodness, sure, it has changed our life. We went out for a day on a Saturday, and when we came back, they said, oh no, you're here already. We wanted to keep playing, and I think that's exactly it. I think if you find someone where they really enjoy, and especially for me and my partner, not having family nearby. Anyways, so I was starting to ask around, asking my friends for their babysitter recommendations. So I'm going to I'll definitely check you out.
Do give us a shout.
Anyways, sorry, I know that you're also about, I'm very much into music and I'm very passionate about instrument learning and all that, so... Yeah, nothing against that, but I think for me it will still be the babysitting / nannying. That would be the main selling point.
Well, fair enough.
So, I mean, you have a one-year-old. How are you managing with a toddler and a baby and a business?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? Well, I have to say, so with both my kids, I didn't take much maternity leave. I was sort of babies out and sort of, it was a... I did take a week or two kind of pause, but then it was kind of straight back into it, baby in tow. So they were just with me the whole time, and it was actually really wonderful. They were part of everything I was doing. They would come to any meetings, be part of calls. And it's, I suppose, a bit of an unpopular opinion, but for me, the sort of newborn stage was actually, I just kind of took it in my stride. That was quite... wouldn't go as far as saying easy, but it felt quite natural and was quite, it fit around my lifestyle essentially. And it was okay. It started becoming a lot more difficult when they hit around 8-9 months, when they start wanting to move around by themselves, demanding a lot more of your attention. They're not just drinking and sleeping. They're actually doing all sorts of other things. And that was especially, well, the first time around, that was quite a shock for me because it had been 8 months of me just going like, oh yeah, this is great. I'm just continuing with my life and continuing with the business, continuing being a mother. I'm with my child all day, but I can still be sort of businesswoman me. And then suddenly the overwhelm, suddenly this feeling that you hear a lot of mothers talk about of, oh, I can't cope. I don't know how to divide my attention. And it hit. And I really didn't expect it because I had had those months of actually, this is going really well. This is fine. And you'd think I learned, but I did the exact same thing with the second. I was again taken aback by that. So I suppose it was sort of a delayed difficulty. But, you know, I would not say that I've figured it out. I haven't. It's a challenge every single day. But really, and I would say this as the founder of Cocorio, but Cocorio has been my lifeline. I also don't have family around. My family's scattered all over the globe, and so are my husband's. Luckily, we've got really supportive neighbors, but in terms of actually supporting in the day-to-day, it's been Cocorio Creative Nannies. So we've got a regular nanny that comes 3 days a week, is always with the kids. Now we've got a mixture of other childcare as well, so the kids are engaged with other kids as well. But it's really been Cocorio. Whenever I needed it, it's been that. And I'm in a sort of a luxurious position that I can pick from our pool of creatives. We've got just over 700 now in London. So that's really been essentially how I've managed. There is no real other answer than that. But it has been really challenging. And there's a lot that comes into play. I mean, just the practicalities of it. So how do you actually get your work done? You know, that sort of thing. But then emotionally and the guilt that comes with it. Are you enough with the business? Are you enough with the kids? You know, that's a constant. I think many working parents would identify with that. Mm. And so I definitely haven't been spared.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting what you're talking about how it comes in waves. And it's, I almost smiled when you were saying that, because you think you've got it sorted and everything is going quite well. And you have this very rare moment where you think, I'm really doing so well. And then suddenly it hits you, and it's always then. Yeah, it's interesting. And One thing that is quite intense in a leadership role is that there is a lot to do all the time. How has your relationship with perfectionism evolved?
Well, so I think I approached initially this role as a founder with a lot of self-doubt because it's not something I'd ever done. I don't have a business background. I'm a creative. I never saw myself running a business initially. So when I jumped into it, I was like, well, I need to push myself crazily in areas that I don't know. And so there was a lot of perfectionism, I suppose, that came into play because I was like, you know, if I think it's good, it probably isn't good because I don't know what I'm doing. So there was a lot of that. But I very quickly learned, and this might not be applicable to all workplaces, but certainly in a startup environment, you don't have the time to be a perfectionist. You need to try things, you need to fail quickly, you need to iterate quickly. So I gradually learned how to do this. And actually, Karina, my co-founder, has been really, really helpful in doing that with me. She also started off as really a perfectionist, but she was very quick at learning the ropes of, you know what, we don't have time to get this perfect. We need to figure out, is it right? Is it wrong? If it's right, we can spend a bit more time on it. But if we're not sure, then we just can't iterate until it's perfect because it will never be perfect, especially as a founder when you know all of the ins and outs of everything. There will always be something to iterate. There will be always a way for it to be better. And so it's been a real exercise of letting go, I think. And for me, I think I'm getting there. I think I'm definitely getting there. But we really see it as well when we hire new people. Loads of people come with that of we need to make everything perfect. And we're very quick to now be like, no, this is not how it runs here. And it might be the way in other organizations, but for us, it's really about we don't have the time to do that. It needs to be just good enough so that we can assess whether it's worth pursuing, whatever it is you're doing. And then from then, if it needs to be iterated, if we need to bring in another professional, whatever it is to bring it up to standards, then we do. But the initial stages, they just cannot be perfect.
I so agree. I'm smiling because when I did the Leaders Plus Fellowship, I am sure at the beginning when I set it up, I must have spent 3 months refining the content.
Oh, yeah.
And oh, my goodness, it was just the dumbest thing to do because all I needed to do is run it and then adapt it. And actually, it's been really powerful. And I would even say today it's not perfect, but the result is that 60% of people, or even actually within the late score, 63% of people got promoted or incredible. Had another senior responsibility like a board role. And that is super, super... Yeah. That's anyways, amazing. Like I think there's something about perfection, but there's also something about value. For me, for a long time, my personal value was connected very strongly to being perfect. And I just had to let that go very, very quickly.
I completely, completely resonate with that. And for me, it was that switch when I realized there is so much more learning if we sort of activate things and then we'll get feedback and we'll learn from it, and then we'll actually get much closer to perfect than if we sit there in our little corner trying to make something perfect. And then on the back of that, it's feedback. One thing I really shied away from in the beginning was I was really afraid of feedback. I was really afraid of somebody telling me, this isn't good, what you're doing isn't good. And that was probably my biggest worry. And I think because of that, I missed out on a lot of things I could have iterated quicker. So yeah, for me, feedback, it kind of links up. You're not going to get it perfect even if you try, but other people will help you get closer to that perfect level that you are aiming for. And that feedback is what's going to get you to something close to perfect, I suppose.
Interesting. And I want to talk to you about risk because you did quite a risky thing, many people would say, of, you know, starting an organization, making a risky career decision when you were pregnant. And I know that a lot of the listeners will be thinking about decisions that they need to make about their career or opportunities they might jump into. And at the same time thinking, my child is about to start school. It's going to be quite intense. Should I just wait for a year? I guess, how did you know that it was the right thing to take this risky decision? Because like, let's not talk about around it. I think it was risky, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I think anytime you're looking to make change, there's an element of risk associated with it. But the thing that still sort of plays in my mind in sort of a constant record is there is no perfect time. Back to the perfectness. I think perfect is the wrong word all the time. There will never be a perfect time. And so I just did it. I tried not to think too much of the risk and just do it. I don't have more of a sort of framework of how to make those decisions. I think it's doing it. But I think it's also letting go of the fact that a decision has to be your end game, if that makes sense. You know, if you make a decision and you later down the line realize it wasn't the right one, then you can own it and iterate, right? And especially if you're running a business, because you're leading, you're in the reins, so you can make those changes if you need to. In terms of that particular decision, I mean, for me, it happened kind of simultaneously. So I was running CoCareer on as very sort of side hustle, kind of me and a few clients, for quite a long time before I took the plunge with my co-founder. And when we did, I essentially found out I was pregnant like 2 weeks later.
All right, so it kind of happened at the same time. You
it kind of happened. But, you know, we were so early on that we could have just said, you know what, it's not a good time. Let's not do it. And many people did tell me, are you sure it's a good time now? We were looking for investment. We were like, do you really want to take on somebody else's money at this stage? And I remember thinking, well, it's not like it's going to get easier later on, you know, sure, I'm pregnant, but like, it is what it is. And we just kind of went with it. We did have a few things that kind of, I suppose, played in our favor a little bit, not really, but they kind of did. So for example, it was in the pandemic. So my co-founder was furloughed. So she still had some level of income coming in, but actually had time to spend on developing the business. So that was quite nice. I was going to start maternity leave. So same kind of position. We didn't immediately need sort of the business to sustain us. So for us, that was kind of a blessing in disguise, I'd say. But I think regardless, if that hadn't happened, we would have still gone for it. But this definitely gave us the ability to sort of start it kind of at our own pace, because we kind of had a bit of a safety net. But yeah, but I mean, to go back to your question at hand, there is just never a perfect time. And so if it's something you really want to do, then, you know, try and create your safety net as much as you can, but you'll never get it perfect. And and yeah, I suppose that's all I can say on that. It's a tough one. It's a very tough one. And it's going to be nerve-wracking and it's going to be hard. But if it's something you want to do, then it's definitely a journey with lots of learning and lots of incredible experiences.
Wow. So you went and you asked for funding and you were pregnant. Obviously, you were able to hide that pregnancy because it was on Zoom.
Initially, no one knew I was pregnant. But then I also didn't want to hide it anymore. And so I don't remember exactly how I did it, but it was just casually brought into the conversation.
The reason why I was so impressed with that is because I don't know the stats, but women are extremely less likely to get money from investors. So for those listeners who don't work in the area of getting investment into a business, you have to go, and you know this best, better later, but essentially you go, you pitch, you try to convince someone to invest in your business and they say yes or no. And you pitch, I imagine, quite often to white, male, rich people. And then women are much, much, much less likely to get that money. Is it less than 10% of investment goes to female funded business?
Oh, absolutely. I don't remember the latest stats, but I think we're looking at 2%-ish or something like that. And it goes even lower if we're looking at women from minority backgrounds. So, I mean, the stats are hugely stacked against us. We were lucky enough to find an amazing angel investor who invested in us and then invested it as a follow-on as well later down the line. He's now on our board, so it's great. But it's a dreadful journey. I don't know any founder that likes fundraising. It's not fun. It's really, really not fun. And also at the time, we really, I mean, I don't want to say we didn't know what we were doing, because we did have a vision.
And this podcast is going out publicly. So of course, Leah was knowing what she was doing and she had a vision, etc.
That's right. That's right. No, but you know, we were first time entrepreneurs and there was just so much learning along the way. We learned so much. And actually our investor has been such a huge help in our learning journey, really, to get to where we are now. So I suppose it's a really good story. It has a really good end. Well, it's not the end, but ending in the sense that we did get the funding and we got a wonderful sort of mentor out of it, I suppose you can call it that. But yeah, it's a tough experience and it certainly didn't help that I was pregnant, unfortunately.
What have you learned about speaking to people who are different from you? I mean, your investors may all be female, but I imagine you did have to pitch to people who look different, who are different. What have you learned about convincing them?
One thing that, I mean, it's probably really obvious when you say it, but actually it did take some learning. People don't get your why immediately. We thought we're here to support families, to help children in their development. What's more important than our future, the future generations? You know, for us, it's obvious. And I don't want to blatantly say that people don't care about future generations, but it certainly felt like it in many conversations. And I think for us, it was really trying to understand what the motives are of these people we're talking to and to speak their language and understand why they would say yes. They're saying yes if they think they can make a return on your business. And so we really had to kind of, you know, we did have to lead with emotion because that's our whole business is about emotion, really. But essentially, we had to prove to them why it was a good investment for them. That didn't come naturally to us. I mean, we were never in jobs where we had to do that sort of thing. And it was never something that, it's definitely not something that comes naturally to me. But we had to quickly learn that that is what was going to give us investment. But I also just want to add to sort of not just on the investment piece, but just generally speaking to people who are different than us, we had to learn through hiring process, hiring our creatives. So we've got over 700 now, but also our core team. And we've had to speak to people who are hugely different than us in so many different ways. And it's been such a huge learning curve for us because we have never been exposed to that many people previously. For us was really to understand different kinds of people, how they think, how they like to be spoken to, how they like to receive information, all of these things which were entirely alien, well, to both me and my co-founder. And it was also really great for us to sort of dive into that, to understand each other better. Because we're hugely different people, even though we are very aligned, we are very different. So one book we read was Surrounded by Idiots that talks about sort of different color personalities. And that's been a really big help in us identifying other people. It's helped when speaking to investors. It's helped when leading our team. It's helped in our relationship. So yeah, I'd recommend Surrounded by Idiots if anybody's looking to figure out how to speak to people who are different to them, which inevitably you'll have to do at some stage.
Thanks for the recommendation. I'll definitely suggest that for our book club. So being in charge of your own organization, and how many members of staff do you have now? So you had 700 creatives.
So 700 creatives and our core team, there's seven of us. So we're still a very small team.
So there's still a lot that you need to keep in your head on a day-to-day basis. And then there's all the, I mean, it's amazing how many medical appointments a normal child has. Unbelievable.
Oh my goodness.
How do you manage keeping on top of that mental load and that, regardless of the task, that is difficult enough, and I'm sure your partner is doing his or her fair share, but
yeah,
how do you keep on top of that mental load, that mental long to-do list?
I can't say that I keep on top of it. I'm not on top of it. I managed to get through it, but I'm not on top of it. That would be a complete lie if I were to say that. I mean, practically, my calendar is my best friend. But emotionally, mentally, it's a whole other story. And I haven't gotten it right. But I'm making a lot of changes recently to make it easier on myself. One thing is just accepting what works for me. So, for example, I don't work well at conventional times. And I've for so long felt like I have to work from 9 to 5:30 because that's when the rest of the team is working. That's what a professional does. And to a large extent, I still do it. But a lot of the time, I need to log off a bit earlier to make pickups when my oldest is at nursery. Or sometimes I've got, as you say, doctor appointments or that sort of thing. And I actually work so much better in the evenings. Once the kids are in bed, that is when I do my best work. And for a long time, I felt like not comfortable with that because I thought, oh, what if people think that I'm just trying to take shortcuts and I'm logging off early or whatever. I'm learning to actually be like, you know what, like, it's okay. I do work better at other times and that's just how it is. And so accepting that and not, no one was beating me up for it. I was just beating myself up for it. And I think as parents, that's one thing we do a lot. Like we sort of, I suppose, try to think like, what will others think? Because you're constantly kind of trying to prove yourself like, I'm still super good at this or whatever. like, you know, and there's this kind of subconscious feeling of you kind of have to prove that you're doing as much as the other people. And I'm trying to rid myself of that because I know I am, but also I'm doing that in my own way. And also I'm in a unique position that I can, because I am the founder of the business, essentially. So I appreciate that's not available to everyone. And, yeah, you know,
but it is so interesting that you are, even as a founder of the business, you're grappling with that. And there's absolutely no reason why you should. But it's so interesting that we are so used to what good work looks like. And actually, yeah, also when you're employed, if you're noticing that you have to write a report and you're not getting anywhere, probably much better to go for a walk and take a break and return to it 2 hours later.
100%. And I think that's something that I definitely got wrong in the beginning. And it was just this expectation that I set, well, on myself. And to be honest, it was, I didn't practice what I preached, in the sense that I would always tell my employees, make sure your notifications are off when you're not working, make sure you really don't work on your day off, you know, all of these things. And, you know, if you need a break now, take your break. You know, the language I was speaking was very pro all of this, but the behavior I was presenting wasn't, and still to this day sometimes isn't. So, and, you know, it's a bit different. As a founder, you're kind of all consumed by this thing you're trying to make work, but still there's an element that you do have to have some sort of boundary to ensure that you function, essentially. And this is the work that I'm doing on myself, for my family, but also for the business and for myself, most importantly, because that's how you end up doing much better work, if you're not concerned with all of the noise around this. You know, it's a difficult thing and so many people struggle with it. And there's such a big move now in organizations all around to be more flexible and all of that, which is great. I think this is really going to help in general, if the norm is that we are flexible, essentially. But we have a long way to go. And I think it starts with looking at yourself and being honest. And so this is what I'm doing right now. I haven't been good at it, but I will be now going forward.
Well, now you've just said it to so many people. Isn't it funny how we're always, I know it sounds cheesy, but we are always on a journey and trying things out, and things change along
Absolutely.
The way. And I resonate with what you said, that it is okay to work when you work at your best. I've just decided, I'm going to the US next week, and I've just decided to put my son into an extra day nursery, so to work 5 days this week instead of four. But that means tomorrow I'm going to go to the hairdresser, I'll write an article, I'll do some work, but it gives me the space to do that easeful and not to rush around. And that's what works for me this particular week. And then when I'm in the US, I'll probably, yes, I'll work, but I'll also take a bit of time off to look at the sites and so on. So, yeah, I think we have to do what is right for us. But it's funny how our expectations of what a good leader looks like is just influencing us so much.
I think also it's not so black and white. So, you know, there's kind of this conception is either you're pro-work-life balance and you sort of don't work outside of work hours and you're, you know, super loads of self-care, all of that, or you're working sort of 70 hour weeks. And actually, it doesn't have to be either or, right? So I think my preferred way and how I would like to go in sort of next, essentially, is where I am working at the time that works best for me. So evenings are much better for me. I just get so much more done. And there will be times where there's a certain project or where, I don't know, fundraising, for example, or whatever. And yeah, we need to put in more hours because higher level of work to be done. But then we do this sort of knowingly. It's not sort of like, oh, we have to be good. It's just sort of like, okay, there's a project, let's get that in. And then, you know, you can kind of reap the rewards later on. So I think it's just also figuring out like what you kind of don't have to put yourself in a box either. It's kind of like what is right for now, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense, and being honest with yourself, honest with your team, you know, and kind of figuring that out. Like, again, being flexible, but also for on that side. So it's a difficult conversation because there's loads of people who are very, have very strong opinions on both sides. And I think, at least for me personally, it very much depends on where we're at sort of business cycle wise and home life wise. Are there many doctor's appointments at the moment or not? You know, and it's all, yeah, I suppose looking at it without having to put yourself in a box and kind of being flexible around whatever is presenting itself.
Absolutely. And I guess, did you receive any advice about combining a big career with young children that has really shaped how you live your life now?
Yeah. So again, the advice, which I can't remember who actually gave it to me, but it's I did mention it already earlier, but it's kind of driven me until today that there is just no perfect time for anything. And I kind of always seem to go back to that. There is no perfect time. So if you want to do something, do it. Or if you have to do something, do it. And if you don't, then don't do it, you know? But like that's kind of always been sort of resonating around me. And it's also, if anybody asks me for, you know, how do you do, or how do you make this decision or whatever, that's always what comes out. There is no perfect time. Like that's the thing that really sort of overarching. But then the next thing that has really helped me is, again, I mentioned it earlier, but it's feedback. I was so scared of feedback, so scared of feedback. And it is one of the biggest things that has driven CoCareer forward. And also me, just general as a person, feedback, hearing from other people, how they would do a certain thing, how they think something should be tweaked. All of these things have come into play. And you also have to know when to disregard feedback. But I think seeking it and being obsessed with understanding other perspectives is so helpful and has driven me really, yeah, a lot in this journey, both on a business perspective, but also in my personal life in general. I think those are the two big things that kind of stand out.
And if someone listening to this is really inspired, they also have young children, but don't quite know how to start, they have an idea, but they don't quite know how to start a business, what would be one or two 5-minute things they can do this week to start with the process?
Okay, so first thing, look at your industry. So I'm going to take CoCareer as an example. If CoCareer was your idea, I would go on LinkedIn and try and schedule literally a very quick online chat with anyone who's kind of in a similar industry or somebody who's vocal about parenting or anything in your space, and just have a chat with them. And depending on where you're at with sort of your idea, if you've literally just got an idea and maybe you're not ready to sort of share it with the world yet, just speak to them, understand kind of any sort of pain points they might have or they foresee, that sort of thing. Just speak to people. And the worst thing you can do is just be by yourself and just try and create something without hearing from the outside world, because unless you're creating something just for yourself, then in that case. But just speak to as many people as you can. That would be the first thing I would say. Let's see. The second thing, follow your gut. You know, if you are looking at starting a business, it's going to be super hard. And hard is good. But also, when it gets past hard and becomes detrimental, you've got to catch it. And that's very, very difficult. And too often, we wait till we're rock bottom before catching it. So you have to be really honest with yourself. Is this good hard or is this bad hard? And it's very difficult to identify. But I think if you go at it with that mindset of hard is good until it becomes bad, I don't know if that makes any sense, but to be mindful of that.
Can you share what you've learned about how to do that, how to identify when it goes from good hard to bad hard?
So when the business decisions or scenarios or whatever you're dealing with on the business side interferes too much with your personal side. And I mean, it's always going to interfere to some extent, but when it gets, so for example, one thing I identified with myself was I was a lot less patient with my kids, a lot more snappy, and just couldn't be the sort of parent that I wanted to be. So this will look different for everyone. That's when you realize, okay, you need to take a step back. So that's going to look very different for different people. But when it kind of starts to interfere in a way that your personal life is too affected, then you need to kind of identify, okay, what can I change to make this work? And often it's just a tweak. Sometimes it might be a bigger decision. But, you know, I think this is really, really important, because it's always going, if you're a startup founder, it's always going to seep into your personal life as well. But there has to be some boundaries. And for me, something that I've been, actually to go back to your question earlier of what are some of the advice that's kind of driven me, this also feeds into this. And it's that kind of the hierarchy your family and health need to come first and then your business. And it sounds obvious when you say it, but actually, if you're really head down in your business, you do need a reminder of that.
And can I ask what you changed? Sounds obvious that change is needed, but how
exactly
to do with this TP?
Identifying where the pressure was for me. And I mentioned it earlier, and that was the idea that actually I need to be working a certain way. I need to be sort of taking off checkboxes of what is expected, whereas actually you can do it your own way. And so for me, it was realizing when am I at my best, optimize those times, let go of that sort of what will other people think, like, oh, is she not pulling her weight? Because I know it's not true. It's just, it looks different, right? So it was very much work within myself. And I think depending on where you identify your pressures or you know, your struggles, it's going to look different. But for me personally, that was kind of what needed to be switched up, I suppose.
Great. And where can people find out about you, about your business?
Absolutely. So I'm personally on LinkedIn. So I'm Leia Henry. But you can also find out about Cocorio, C-O-C-O-R-I-O, on LinkedIn or Facebook. Instagram is our main channel because we've got loads of vibrant, beautiful, colourful posts that showcase our creativity and what we can bring in your home. So those are places to go.
Fantastic.
Oh, and we've got a website as well. Oh. Website, cocorio.co.uk.
Well, in reality, most people are probably going to look at the social profiles.
I would definitely be like, oh, Leah, why didn't you mention the website if I had left this call without mentioning it?
I'm just going to ask one more question out of curiosity. You mentioned you are a creative and I'm intrigued. What are you, a dramatist? Are you a musician, an artist?
I am a classical singer.
Oh, my goodness. How cool. Oh, that is so cool. Well, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much for inviting me onto your podcast. And I'm really, really excited to be speaking with you. And I've been listening to your podcast for a while and really love it. So it's an honor to be on.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for listening today. And a special thank you to all of those of you who have connected with me on LinkedIn in the last few weeks. I really, really love hearing from listeners and hearing how you enjoyed the show. So it means a lot. Thank you so much. If you would like to be in touch in real life, do consider joining the Leaders Plus Fellowship program. It is such a fantastic community of working parents supporting each other to find a way to get careers where you can make a big difference in senior roles, but also do that unapologetically in a way that works for us. And if you want to apply, then the deadline is 20th of March. You can download the brochure for the program on leadersplus.org. Podcasting is also quite a male-dominated environment. If you look at the top charting podcasts, especially outside of the kids and family space, very often it's all led by men. I can't remember the numbers, but it is very male-dominated. Just take a look at the charts. And interestingly enough, more females than males listen to podcasts. So another unequal space. And thank you for supporting this podcast by listening to it. But if you want to help us, I guess, have more influence in the space, then please do help by sharing it with your friends and by leaving a 5-star review. Thank you so much to all of those of you who've done that already. Have a wonderful week.